Accession number 17664, Reel 3.
Mr. Elliot, Reel 3. You were just explaining this diamond formation to me.
Well, if you think of a playing card, like a diamond and diamonds, you had to get a person on each corner of a diamond, which is four people. And we had three sections like that. And one in the front and two behind, side as parallel. But the diamond in the front, unfortunately, was the one that took the brunt of the attack.
But you were in the second diamond?
Yes, I was.
Whereabouts?
I was on the left-hand side of the rear, one of the rear diamonds. You got two diamonds side by side, and I was on the left-hand side, on the inside of the left-hand side one. And as soon as they opened fire, all hell let loose, and you just get in formation, protect your wounded, and get yourself into position to fight. Well, we were firing and grenades were going off, and then these Chinese overran us, and that is when Mr. Henson was fighting hand to hand. He lost his watch and he lost his compass. They must have nicked those off him because he had those on his wrist, and it went from there, really.
So in fact there were three diamonds.
Yes.
One ahead and then two behind.
That's right. One ahead and two level diamonds behind, and Mr. Henson in the centre.
And you were on the left hand side diamond on the inside.
Yeah, that's right, on the inside, yeah. And as I say, the first diamond caught all the crossfire, and they were the four chaps that got killed. And
so, Mr. Henson, what was he, a lieutenant?
Yes, a lieutenant.
And where did he go in relation to the three diamonds?
He was in the centre. He was commanding in the centre, you see. And you can imagine three diamonds, four men in each diamond, one in the front, two behind, and Mr. Henson in the centre. And that's it. And we were patrolling, we were going along like that. And fortunately we were like that, otherwise we might have lost a lot more men. Had we been in a row or line or bunched together, we would have lost a lot more men. But that was his decision, and that was the formation we took up, and we got hit.
How far apart were the diamonds then?
Oh, only about a few paces. We were within. You're at night and you could see the guy in front of you, you know, so you're not spread out all that much, but within five paces, you know, you can see it. You can still all see each other silhouetted against the sky.
And how do you communicate with each other?
Well, you don't. I mean, it's instincts. I mean, as soon as all hell let loose and they open fire, you're shouting. I mean, it's obvious that no matter what you do then, you've just got to give orders, Mr. Henson, give orders, you know, and get yourself in formation, sort of thing, and you do it. Your training is such that it's instinct. I mean, after that career, and I'd been to Korea, we went to the cinema, and I was in the back row of the cinema watching this war film, and the gun started up, and I was on the floor. Instinct. You feel a bit of a fool, but you're on the floor. We went to Tokyo on leave. And we had these beds and that, and we couldn't sleep. We just finished up rolling out sheets on the floor, and then I went to sleep on the floor. We just couldn't sleep.
You mean it's too soft?
Yeah, too much comfort. Sheets? Good Lord, what sheets? I mean, I've seen my shirt when you change your shirt after a week or so, and you lay it on there, and you can see it moving. You think, whatever's that? And there's lice in the collar. And the seams that you didn't know was there. I mean, they used to go and be fumigated. And you were never bitten or anything like that. You just used to live all in harmony with each other. You know, I mean, there's nothing like it. If you go like that and you can see these lice, and you think, my God, Yeah, it's a fact of life. And
but coming back to this patrol again, mm-hmm. So once the firing started, you said you went into formation. You mean in a ring?
Yeah. Protect your wounded. Get yourself into a defensive position. Which means you've got to be protected from all angles. You can't watch your back. Somebody else is doing that. You're in a circle. So you're protecting your wounded and yourselves from the back and all round. But when you're overrun, these Chinese came in and they overrun you, and you're fighting hand to hand, and you're hitting people with the butt of your butt of your gun instead of firing at them for quickness, fists as well, anything, and you're desperate. Life, isn't it? Life and death. And then they withdraw, and you're left to recuperate and to estimate how many people you've got. You would then have a roll call, and Miss Hanson will not want to know who's fit, who's not, who's fightable, who's able to fight, and in the meantime, poor old Till's sitting on his aerial trying to get through, and he can't get through, and you look around and you say, "You're sitting on your aerial." "Oh, sorry." So he calms as if he's sitting in the high street. Bullets whistling about all over the place, puts his aerial up, you know, and gets through.
Were you in hand-to-hand fighting yourself, personally?
No, I wasn't, luckily, but I was on the floor. I missed that. I threw a grenade, and I was down. I shouted out, "Grenade gone." And this all happened so quick. You see, when you try to describe this, it's all happening quick. You're hit, you're down, and you're reformed. It's all sort of automatic, and minutes seem like hours. And you can hear all these people running about and jabbering away, all these Chinese. And they found six dead, and they reckoned that there was many more killed and wounded, but they couldn't estimate how many. But they did say at the time that there was quite a lot. And
six Chinese dead.
Mm. Yes.
How many Norfolks dead?
Three. Mm. Three Norfolks that got killed. But that was one of these times when everything's happened so quick, you know. I remember it vividly. But to anybody like yourself, you can't imagine how quick that's happening. It's instant. So this is training.
When you threw your grenade, who were you throwing? Who or what were you throwing it at?
Well, I knew that there was Chinese in front of me, and I knew they were close. So I pulled the pin and threw the grenade, shouted out to my pals, "Grenade gone," and they would hug the ground. Boom! Off she goes. Hopefully, you caught someone. Protection, right? Yeah. Now you're firing your weapons. And automatic weapons, and you're on the defensive. You know, you've got to really. There's no time to think. You just reactions. Like that gas block. I would never, in a thousand years, thought that anybody in action like that could change a gas block, because it means you unlock your barrel, you take your barrel off, you get a bullet, and you turn the gas block. Take it off, put another one on, turn it back, put the barrel back on. Now in training you're doing this all the time, and they time you, you know. But to do it on active service, natural instincts, boom, you've done it. You're firing again, another magazine on. It's incredible, really. But that's only because that training has been drummed into you. But when you're doing it, you're cursing and moaning and that. You know, these people, the NCOs and the RSMs that train you, they really know the job. They know what they're talking about. They're regulars, they've been through it. I mean, Winky Phipp, our RSM, he lived in Norwich, and I was very friendly with him until he died last year. And he'd been through everything. He'd been through wars, he'd been he knew war and action like the back of his hand, and he knew exactly what to do. You could follow him anywhere, you know. You could respect anybody like that. There you go. That's
so. Mm. You said you formed this circle, this ring.
Mm-hmm.
How does everybody know whereabouts to go in the ring then?
Well, you just drop down where you are. I mean, you know, you wouldn't try to push in over there, over that side, because there's somebody there already. You've got to spread yourselves out, you see. I mean, when you got three killed, you only got you've got 13 men, you know, that's 10, and you've got to form a circle around those wounded, and those dying and wounded. And
were all the three deaths in the first diamond?
Well, no, two boys were instantly killed. One was shot in the throat, and it took him quite a while to die. And he was moaning and groaning, and you know, yeah, people under those circumstances, they say a lot of things, you know, call for the mother, and the whole past flashes before their eyes, I suppose. I don't know, but it's a terrible thing when you hear that, and you can't help, because you've got to be firing, you've got to be throwing grenades, you've got to be doing other things, you know. And poor old Smudgy was laying there, and you couldn't help him. But first things first.
He was in the first triangle.
Yes. Yes.
And there was another one in the first triangle killed.
Yes, there's two. All of boys in the first triangle got killed, but two of them was instant. One of them, you know, bullets right across his stomach, you know. So no hope at all. Took the full brunt of the ambush. That first diamond did.
But one of them lived.
Oh, yes. Yes, one of them lived, yeah. Yeah.
And how quickly were you wounded after the first firing?
Well, I was wounded, I suppose, about... Well, when we all reformed, and we was in the circle, and then I got wounded. I got some shrapnel in my ankle. They were throwing grenades about all over the place, so it was obviously from a grenade. And the other boys got wounded in that circle. Maybe we were being fired upon. And the hand-to-hand combat, I don't think anybody got hurt in that. It was the bullets and the firing and the shrapnel.
Did any of the Chinese soldiers come close to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ran over me, ran over the top of me. Ran past me, thought I was dead, I suppose. I was on the floor, playing it. I'd thrown this grenade, and I was laying there, firing on that. And, they were there, rushing about. It was all like wind, rushing people, rushing about. You know? And, huge, big boats. Green sort of jungle wear on. And, well, once our reinforcements arrived, they went, they dispersed. We were right then. They were still out there, but they'd stopped firing, they'd gone back to base.
How frightening was it in the action itself? Was there any fear in the action itself, or did that come afterwards?
No, in the action itself, I would say that everybody was doing the job at hand. As I say, you don't really get a chance to think. You know what's happened. You know your mates have been hit, and you've got to protect yourself. And it's then life or death, and everybody's at the peak. You know, I mean, there's no two ways about that. You really got to admire. I mean, the National Servicemen in Korea really proved that he was a capable person. And I think it was then that the regular army accepted the National Service, because they really did do a good job. No two ways about that. Yeah. And well, that's what I feel anyway. Or the experience I had, you know. You know, there were regular soldiers in our unit. And We used to get on well with them, you know.
Were there regular soldiers in that patrol as well?
No. No, there wasn't. They were all National Service. Yeah. And I go to the Korean Veterans Association, and as I say, Bill Chapman, a friend of mine, lives at Fakenham. He was on that patrol, and but he wasn't wounded, and they gave them leave. Quite a long leave, I think. And they, in that leave, they had a tour around the battleships, and he was telling me that the battleships that give us covering fire when we are out on patrol, we get in skirmishes, we call out and you get support, and they used to bombard the Chinese positions immediately in front of us, and spotter planes used to come over, and we had air panels that used to change every day. One day that would be an L, another day that would be a diamond, another day that would be a T, in different colours, silk, and you'd lay them on the back of your positions so the spotter plane would come over and see that and then bombard the positions in front of you. Well, one day the spotter plane came from the front. He came from the front of our positions, not from the rear. And what did he do? Opened up on us. Called out the sabre jets, and they come and bombed our units. And that dropped the Naplan bombs on us.
Were you there then?
Yes. And setting fire to the trees, and Naplan bombs going up all over the place. The spotter plane then realised the mistake and fired at the sabre jets. So that stopped their little game. But on that particular day, I was in the advanced lookout. We used to have an advanced lookout, which was a slit trench that used to go all the way to a dugout on the front of the hill, and you could watch the whole valley, and you'd have field glasses, and if you see a tree one day and you think, well, that tree has moved, there'd probably be a tank that is moved, you know, camouflage tank, and you'd report that, give a map reference, such and such a tank or tree appears to have moved, you know, and you, all those sort of things you would record so that you know what's going on. Yeah. But that day the jet went over, and I see these same jets coming, and I thought, they're coming straight at us, and they did, down in the bottom of the trench, dropping the Naplan bombs on our positions. Well, nobody got hurt, fortunately, but if it hadn't been for the spotter plane, I think they would have done, because they had to come back.
How near did the napalming come to you?
Well, that was, a couple hundred yards, quite a long way away, you know. And then one night, we heard these planes going over, and they bombed the positions in front of us, the Chinese, but those bombs whistled down, and I thought they was coming on top of us. Crash, bang, one crash in front of us, and they got dead on target. But of course, that was a scary old time. We thought that they was bombing us, but they didn't. They got the target. Then the next day, we had leaflets all over the place, and there was pictures of an English family sitting round the table with the Christmas pudding and the turkey all on the table. Wouldn't you love to come home, go home? Surrender to us and we will make sure you get home. It was the Chinese voluntary army. They'd drop all these leaflets on us. And then they would, an aeroplane would go over with a loudspeaker. Give yourselves up, Johnny. We will send you home. All morale boosting, you see. All to get us morale down. And then you would hear the drums banging, the bugles playing. And there would be Chinese over there in the valley blowing these bugles and banging the drums and making a hell of a noise, you know. And then they would attack. And you would have a wave of maniacs flying at your barbed wire, getting shot and hanging on the wire. Then the next wave would come over with guns and pistols and things and knives, jump over those because they're hanging on the wire, they would get shot. And then after that you get a wave of the crack infantry with all the weapons, the automatic weapons, which were mainly Russian. They used Russian guns. We caught the captain, and they would come along and attack, and they would be a full frontal attack, you know. And then they would, you would defend your positions, and then they would go. And that's static warfare. And there'd be bodies lying a bit all over the place. These Chinese bodies, and if you tried to get out to bury them, because of the stench, you would find that you'd be shot at. Snipers looking out all the time, and you would be shot at, and you couldn't get to them to bury them. And then in no man's land, between our positions and the Chinese positions, there would be a big pit that they would dug, and they would drop their dead in there. They would drop dead bodies in there, and they would smell the stench, it would be terrible. And that stench of death would be in your throat, and you couldn't get it out. That'd be there. And that's one of those things that was in the air. You could smell it. It was a terrible smell of death. But there you go. That's war, I suppose. But that's static warfare. That's when you're patrolling and day-to-day combat. You had the bombardments of mortars. When I went back to the company, there was a patrol that got lost, got hit, and a Lieutenant Wormore, I think his name was, he was lost, and we had to send a daylight patrol out to try find him.
Now, were you on it?
I was on it, yeah. And I didn't like that at all. I must admit, I was really, well, to put it mildly, scared, I suppose. Because I'd been hit on this patrol, I'd seen all that. And then to go back in broad daylight on a position that was hilly, and you're all right when you're in the valleys, but when you see, we went along a valley. And the mortar fire opened up, and they was in front of us about 300-400 yards, and they were exploding away from us, dead accurate along this valley, on the road that we were on, the track that we were on, covering fire for us, clearing the way. We got to this position, which was, we were on one top of one hill. And looking on top of the other hill, we knew that they were the Chinese, and they had positions there. So we had to keep really low to the ground. Now, we had a sergeant with us, I won't mention his name, but he got up on his knees and was looking around as if he was on a Sunday school outing. And we all shouted at him. Anyway, he got down, but he drew the mortar fire from the enemy. Now they bombarded us, and McNeil from Norwich, I think his name was McNeil, he was a stretcher bearer, and he carried a stretcher all the way around, but he went back on it. He got a direct hit, a mortar bomb hit him, killed him. So we carried him back on that stretcher. And a friend of mine who lived near me in St Ives, he lived at Papworth, near St Ives. We were laying side by side, and a mortar bomb went off in front of us, and I could have put my hand in it, in the crater, and he could have put his hand in the crater. That was that close. So close, in fact, that I think the blast went over the top of us, just missed us. And that, well, deafened us. We couldn't hear a thing for for days, but that was as close as I'd ever been, and that that was on that daylight patrol. And we didn't find Wormhole anyway. So we came back, and poor old Mac, we carried him back on the stretcher, and the most evil thing I ever think happened was one of the corporals on the patrol. We had to go through A Company lines back. We were C Company, and he said, "Wait there," and he pulled a blanket off this guy that had been there. He said, "This is what you can expect," he said, when you're out on patrol. And his face is all blown away. And I think that was the most evil act I've ever seen in my life. This corporal making an example, showing people, I mean, everybody knows what to expect in war. You don't have to see it, do you? But I never did forget that either. Anyway, we carried him back, and because as I say, that was through A Company lines, we had to go through A Company lines. And
so what happened to the lieutenant you were looking for?
We didn't find him. He was never found. I think he was taken prisoner. Yeah. And we used to get some maniacs there, and we used to get people stand up and make an example of themselves just to try to draw fire so you could see where the enemy were. They used to risk their life going like this and shouting and waving her arms about, because the Chinese never did used to retaliate, because they knew that they were going to give their positions away. You know. But, that's one of those things that it's a period of your life you live through, and it all happened so quick. But I really was scared on that second patrol in broad daylight. And I was always a bit cautious after that, you know. I used to keep my old head down.
You were talking about those Chinese frontal attacks.
Mm.
How many of those did you personally have to
only
do?
Only one, actually. But the Glorious Glossers, like you mentioned before, they had the Black Watch, and they all had really horrific attacks. Thousands and thousands of Chinese used to come, overwhelm you. You know.
On that occasion when you had to deal with one,
mm-hmm.
about how many Chinese were attacking then?
Well, it seems like thousands, but it's probably about hundreds, you know. They were after the strategic positions, you see. And I always remember once, I think that was Hill 355. And the Australians had taken this hill, they'd fought and took it, handed it over to the Americans, and the Americans got attacked and just left it. You know, it's one of those sort of things that happen. But if you're on the highest hill, you're in the best position. And that's what it's all about, really.
And was that Chinese frontal attack that you dealt with, was it in daytime or at night?
Daytime, and you'd have women leading these attacks, wearing silk, black silk tunic and trousers. And the theory was, I think, that if women